Good morning. It's 7:33. I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown. A number of children's health issues are making their way through the Senate, but the lead sponsor of one of those bills chose to redraft his legislation in the form of a resolution for Congress. Ashton Mara reports.
A bill introduced in the Senate would direct the State Department of Health and Human Resources to apply for a waiver with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The waiver would prohibit the purchase of soda and junk foods with Supplemental Assistance Nutrition Program benefits, or food stamps. Its sponsor, Senator Ron Stallings, says the intent was to control the obesity and poor oral health epidemics ravaging children in low-income families across the state.
In general, if you look at the statistics, the more affluent folks have more access to oral health, don't tend to be as overweight. Okay, so these SNAP benefits, supplemental nutrition benefits, have a way of having a very good outcome or a very bad outcome, depending on how you spend the money. And sometimes we're not using the wisest choice of foods when we're in our stores. And so,
in the past, states like New York and California have applied for waivers and were denied, which Danielle Swan with the West Virginia Beverage Association says shows the federal government isn't interested in taking the issue on.
Nationally, the USDA has never granted such a waiver and has really indicated that it's not inclined to do so because there's really no basis in this instance to restrict, particularly in the sense that folks that qualify for SNAP and folks that do not show the same usage. And the obesity rate is the same for folks that qualify for SNAP and folks that don't. So we really see it as a solution looking for a problem and think the better solution would be educating our children and families.
But advocates like Chris Kimes, political director for the West Virginia Healthy Kids and Families Coalition, say education isn't enough.
We agree that education is important. But unfortunately, the course of action that we've taken up until this point has been education, and look where it's gotten us. So while education is great, we need to begin to do something more. And so we know that if we can really focus on prevention, we're going to be in a better off position.
Stallings, however, decided against continuing his legislation and is opting for a resolution instead, calling on Congress to change the benefits. After voting to cut the program by more than $8 billion last week, Stallings says now is the time for federal action for all states, not just West Virginia.
The DHHR said that if you had legislative intent that we might be further along and might actually be able to get the waiver. So that's why the bill would have been important. So it would show that the legislature of West Virginia compelled the DHHR to apply for the waiver. The weight of the legislature would be behind the concept. This way, the resolution, if we can get it passed, would call on Congress to make changes for all the states, not just the one state.
His resolution also calls for incentives for those families who are making healthy choices by giving them an increase, so to speak, in benefits.
You'd get 25% more buying power if you were spending it on like fresh fruits and vegetables, particularly.
Stallings says this resolution is about influencing the public to make better choices for their children. He admits this bill won't do it alone, but is advocating for other legislation to increase physical activity and access to nutrition, hoping they all work together to ensure a healthier generation of West Virginians for the future. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
With the primary election coming in May and the general election in November, the House Judiciary Committee took a look at current code that prohibits elected officials and candidates from soliciting public employees. As Aaron Payne reports, the law needed to be updated to include email.
Yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee discussed House Bill 4414 relating to the solicitation of public employees by an elected officer of the state. Chairman Tim Manchin explains that the main purpose of the bill is to update the language of current code to include modern technology and to better define what would qualify as solicitation.
The bill was basically designed to make it clear under our current election laws that electronic communications were the same as soliciting somebody in person, so that public employees are not to be solicited directly at their offices, whether it be at the county commissions or whether it be in the state house, for funds or for support. That was the other part of what the bill did, was it made clear and clarified that Support is more than just monetary contributions. It can include asking people to come out and put up signs or to go door to door for you or to drive you someplace, those sorts of things.
Investigations into solicitation are currently handled by the Secretary of State's office. Assistant Legal Counsel Tim Leach answered Delegate John McCuskey's question about the current problem with solicitation in West Virginia.
Then how many people have we prosecuted in the last 5 years?
We haven't prosecuted anybody under this. We've had some discussions with prosecutors. We've had a number of occasions where this has come up, and we have gone to the candidates or the campaigns involved and asked them what they were doing. And I think I've given this statistic before, but many of our cases end up in what we call educational moments, letters of instruction, and if you will, to the campaign saying, you know, you're on notice, this was not done right, don't do it that way in the future, or you'll be facing different type of response.
Delegate Linda Longstreth asked if punishment would be enforced if an elected official or candidate unknowingly sent a mass email as part of a mailing list.
I don't know who all works for the government, to be honest, that I send out, you know, information to. So is that a case-by-case basis?
It is a case-by-case basis. If you had a mixed mailing list, some of them were .gov. I mean, speaking before the case is ever presented to me, if I saw an effort to remove the .govs from the list, but you didn't get everybody, or some, if you presented some explanation for I'm trying to comply with this law, I don't think it's a big issue. If you deliberately obtain some way by FOIA or from the state directory, state government employees' names and email addresses, you know, you're on notice. You went to the state employee directory to get those email addresses.
Absolutely.
That's a much harder case for you to defend your actions, in my view.
As confusion grew, the committee moved to amend the bill in an attempt to clearly state what elected officials and candidates can do. The committee substitute for the bill was approved to be reported to the floor with the recommendation that it do pass. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:40. West Virginia University has been at work sampling residences for MCHM, and with a grant from the National Science Foundation. As Glennis Board reports, they plan to continue to sample and analyze results to assess public exposure and determine best practices should another chemical spill contaminate water sources in the future.
Jennifer Weediff is an assistant professor of civil and environmental engineering at West Virginia University. She says, as WVU is a land-grant institution, her department stepped up to begin a research project to study the Elk River chemical spill to fulfill the university's mission of serving communities in the state. She's one of the lead researchers on the project.
What we ended up doing was getting some money immediately from the university here to go down and do some immediate sampling. And during that time, we were also applying for this grant from NSF to do the follow-on studies. The immediate money that we got from the university was to go down and collect some samples within homes there in Charleston from some of our alumni and folks that we do work with down there, and then also to sample along the river and in the sediments.
Weediff explains that in an effort to assess exposure, her team took samples from within homes before the flushing process as well as immediately after, and then again in the following week. Preliminary results indicate that the flushing wasn't as effective as officials hoped it would be.
In all the houses that we sampled, the concentrations were still well below the CDC recommended 1 milligram per liter. So it didn't. Those concentrations don't represent an immediate risk to the residents in the homes. But again, I don't think that flushing campaign was necessarily as effective as American Water wanted it to be.
Weediff says sampling continues.
You know, we're starting to see concentrations come down, so we're at least going to do one more round of sampling. And keep in mind, this is about 2 weeks after the folks have flushed out their houses. But it's hard to say how long things will stay in their system. Because, I mean, if you look at the data that's reported on the Department of Homeland Security and Environmental Management, there are still periodic detections of MCHM in their systems.
The goal is to first assess the risk of the people in the Kanawha Valley, and second, to use the information to develop appropriate responses to disasters that could compromise other water distribution systems.
There's a spill in your river. How do you respond to that? Do you need to shut down your intake or not? Is there a better way that we can flush out our distribution systems once there already is contamination in those lines?
Weediff explains that the funding awarded so far is seed money to collect perishable data over the first couple weeks to months after the contamination occurred, and it also covers lab fees to analyze those samples. Ultimately, her department will be pursuing other funding sources to conduct follow-up studies. She expects the chemical spill study to continue for the next year. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
The Sea performs Water Treader on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
John Ingram.
The Sea with Water Treader. You can hear this and more music on Mountain Stage, Sunday afternoon at 2, on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast while you're there. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Board, Dave Mistich, Ashton Mara, and Beth Voorhees. Our producer is Bob Powell. From Morgantown, I'm Beneduccio. Good morning.